Investing Simplified is brought to you by Chuck Price, President and Wealth Manager of Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm and author of Investing Simplified, the book. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated. Investing Simplified is the longest-running live financial show in America, with a financial advisor, an estate planning attorney, and a CPA to answer your questions for free, and is broadcast live from Portland, Oregon on affiliated stations throughout the Pacific Northwest. Chuck can be contacted by visiting www.pfgwm.com. You can email Chuck with a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com. Or you can call him right now at 503-417-9595. That's 503-417-9595. Or for our long distance and podcast listeners, you can call toll free at 877-733-1011. That's 877-733-1011. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
Well, good morning, Portland and the Pacific Northwest. Welcome to Investing Simplified. In studio with me, I have one of my co-host, Kevin Stege, with the Baker Colson CPA firm.
Good morning, Chuck.
Good morning, Kevin. Kevin just flew in from Pearl Harbor.
Or Hawaii, that is. But had a chance to visit Pearl Harbor. Moving time.
And you had a chance to do that with your dad.
Yes, we did.
How great.
Yep.
How great. I got to tell you, if you've never been to Pearl Harbor, it is a aha moment in your life when you go out there.
It is.
On the Arizona, no question about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd highly recommend it. If you've never done it, go do it. It's worth it.
It's moving to see how many people still go out there on a kind of a slow, rainy day to pay their respects for what happened so long ago.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, before we get started, I got to say one thing. We got to congratulate all mothers, because Mother's Day is tomorrow. And we want to say God bless all the mothers out there. And if it wasn't for our mothers, none of us would be here. So just remember that. They went through the labor to bring you into this earth. So God bless the mothers. And I hope all of you have a great, great day tomorrow. Well, listen, I've been offering on the show for the last few months, I've been offering a book. And one of the books, I've actually been offering four books, but one of the books is The Top 10 IRA Mistakes, How to Avoid the IRA Tax Traps. And today, I actually have the author of that book and a good friend of mine, David F. Royer, who is president and CEO of DLCA Enterprises, LLC. And he's calling in from, I think, from Texas, but I'm not sure. David, where are you at today?
Texas. It's sometimes referred to as a northern Dallas suburb, but those of us that live in Frisco, we consider Dallas to be our southern suburb.
Okay, very good. Well, David, it's great to have you on our show. You and I have been talking about this for over a year, I think, but I'm happy to have you on here. And listen, anybody who's listening to the show, if you want a free copy of this book, you can come by my office. I will give you a copy of the book. I only have one request. If you get a copy, read it. Because I'm telling you, if you read this book, it'll change your outlook on retirement planning. Did I get that right, David?
I think you hit it right on the head there, Chuck.
Yeah. Well, David, our show is an interactive show. Sometimes we'll get callers. So, callers, this is your opportunity to talk to probably one of the top IRA experts in the country, and if you have a question, David is the guy that Chuck Price goes to when he has something really difficult to get taken care of or a question about retirement planning. And David recently helped me out on a case that we're still working through, but we got two thirds of it done, which thank goodness we did. But thanks to David's help. And David, why is IRA distribution planning so important?
Well, it's important for a lot of reasons, Chuck, but kind of let me start with the volume. According to the Investment Company Institute, right now there's around $25 trillion in America's retirement plans. And for many savers, Chuck, their IRAs and 401k plans are worth more than their homes. There's two issues regarding IRA planning. One is accumulation. This is when you're making your contributions to your IRAs and 401ks, et cetera. And the other consideration is distribution. So what we've noticed is when it comes to the accumulation phase, when we're paying that money and we're saving that money, there's really only three things you need to know. One is, am I eligible to contribute? The second is, how much can I contribute? And the third, well, where do I want to put that money? So it's a very simple world. There's no IRS payday. You're getting a tax break on your contributions. This all changes after age 70 and a half, and that's what we call the distribution stage. So starting after 70 and a half, it gets more complicated. And that's where many savers, Chuck, I think, get tangled up in the IRS rules. They begin to make mistakes, and unfortunately, these mistakes are very costly and often irreversible.
Well, what prompted you to write the book, Top 10 IRA Mistakes, and How to Avoid IRA Tax Traps?
That's a great question. You know, I've spent over 40 years in the financial services industry, and what I have noticed is there's really two types of advisors. There are accumulation advisors, and these are people that help you grow your money. And that's in that simple phase we just talked about. And then there are very few distribution advisors. So what I noticed, most advisors are not skilled in IRA distribution planning. And because of that, Chuck, consumers just aren't getting good advice, or they're getting no advice, particularly if you're in a 401k. You're paying big fees for no advice. And these mistakes can be costly and irreversible. I can give you one quick example if you'd like.
Sure.
Well, one of the biggest examples and one of the most common mistakes that people that own IRAs, 401ks, 403bs, TSPs, SEPs, all types of qualified plans, the mistake is this: failing to take that required minimum distribution. So you've got to start taking money out of these plans and pay tax on them after you turn age 70 and a half. If you miss a distribution, the outcome is absolutely disastrous. So I'll just give you an example. Let's say the distribution you were supposed to take, based on your age and the amount of money in your IRA, let's just say it was $10,000 is your required minimum distribution. December 31st is come and gone. And for whatever reason, it could have been a health reason, you could have been traveling, whatever reason, you failed to take that distribution. Here's what's going to happen. You still have to pay tax on that distribution. So on $10,000, I'm going to ballpark the taxes at $3,000. But then it gets worse. Half of that $10,000 missed distribution becomes a penalty. Now, the IRS uses the polite word excise tax. It's a penalty. So if you take the $5,000 penalty and you add it to the $3,000 income tax, the total tax and penalty would be $8,000. So guess what happened? You had a $10,000 distribution that was meant for your retirement planning, but you wound up paying $8,000 to the IRS, leaving $2,000 for you. And Chuck, in these scenarios, the IRS just became your 80% senior partner in that distribution.
Now, Kevin, our local CPA, is shaking his head here because he knows exactly what you're talking about.
I'm feeling that pain there, David. I hear you.
Yeah.
I get a lot of calls. You know, my client failed to take a distribution. What can I do? And the answer is, well, you can advise them to pay the tax and penalty right away.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I hate giving that answer.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, David, I just wanted to make a comment regarding your first point regarding IRA distribution planning. I couldn't agree with you more. I just see so often with our clients, you know, or taxpayers, they've spent their life deferring income into their IRA, contributing, doing everything they should, and then they get up to the stage of time to take the money out, and they just kind of fall into, well, maybe they get their RMD, they get the letter to take the RMD, and so they go ahead and do that. But oftentimes people are in a bracket where they have excess deductions and maybe aren't taking more out than they should, and you know, leaving this money in a tax deferred account when they could be,
or maybe converting some of it to a Roth.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And just some of that can be a really key planning in the distribution stage.
Yeah, I completely agree. And Chuck, I like your comment about converting some of that to a Roth. You know, once you've done that, you have fired your unwanted partner, and the IRS no longer has an interest in your account.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the things we've really talked to our clients about at tax time. If if they can take more, let's take that money, and instead of just taking it out, let's put it into a tax-free Roth.
Excellent maneuver.
Yeah. Well, there was a question that I wanted to ask you. Can you explain the tax law changes in 2002 regarding IRAs, 401ks, that can benefit anyone who owns a qualified retirement account?
That's a great question, Chuck. You know, prior to 2002, if a child or a grandchild inherited any part of their parents' or grandparents' IRA, they had to pay all the taxes within a five-year period. And these are sometimes people in their high-income years, they're in high tax brackets, and so that was kind of a tax burden for them. Beginning in 2002, they are these same children and grandchildren that may inherit part of these IRAs or 401ks now have the right to spread those taxes and those distributions over their entire life expectancy, which could be as long as 83 years. They literally get to enjoy a lifetime of income. It's kind of like getting a birthday present every year for the rest of their lives. And Chuck, you know, a $200,000 IRA, if it's properly structured, can pay out as much as $1 million or more of income over three generations. But here is the caveat. Their beneficiary forms must be set up properly to take advantage of those laws in 2002.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, just to give you a thanks on a case that you helped me with, one of our companies that we work with, on a stretch IRA for three members of a family. Their father passed away prematurely, because anytime you go under age 60, that's definitely premature. Anyway, he passed away, and we were able to set up the his retirement accounts with a stretch that is going to pay those daughters. Each of them on theirs is going to almost five times the amount that he had left them over their lifetime, because they're all young. They're all in their 18 to 22 age. So they're going to be throwing this out over the next 50, 60 years, to 70 years.
And they're getting to defer those taxes for a long period of time. And by doing that, they continue to earn interest on what otherwise would have paid prematurely in taxes.
Well, one of the strategies we've done, David, that we've done in our office with clients who that we have set up on a stretch, we meet with the kids, and because they have to take that RMD based on their life expectancy over the time period, we have them take that money when they have to take a distribution and set themselves up a Roth IRA with the money. And that way it gets them, they can convert basically that IRA contribution. Over time, they can convert that to a Roth IRA.
I'm a big believer in the Roth IRA. You know, anything that grows tax-free and gets distributed tax-free, well, actually, you can add tax-free to anything to make it better.
Yeah, free's a good price.
It is.
Any way you cut it, absolutely.
Well, probably key to the stretch IRA or the inherited IRA is making sure the beneficiary designations are correct. Isn't that right, David? I mean, I we do a lot of estate and trust work, Chuck and I do together, and not so much on our accounts, but other ones. Boy, when you see the IRA from a deceased person and there's no beneficiary designation, or maybe the spouse had passed away and there were no contingencies, now you've got some trouble on your hands.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, what I have noticed is 90-plus percent of beneficiary forms for IRAs make the spouse the primary and the children the contingent. Well, it's a little-known fact. To take advantage of the stretch, you have to be a designated beneficiary, and only the IRA owner and spouse can make that designation. So when you name the spouse as primary and the children as contingent, you are literally disinheriting the grandchildren unknowingly.
Very interesting. Okay. Now, a stretch IRA can work with grandchildren, too, the next generation down. Is that correct, the inherited
IRA? Absolutely. But the important thing is they have to inherit at the same time the children do. It's called the one-tier approach. So dad owns the IRA, passes away. Mom's the primary beneficiary. When mom passes away, you can't just leave it to the children. You have to leave it to the children and grandchildren simultaneously. this is the only way those grandchildren are going to be able to spread those taxes and payments out. And again, have that essentially a birthday present from grandma or grandpa every year for the rest of their lives.
And that you know, we call that a check from heaven. You know, because it's the I love you for the rest of your life. You're getting a check from me, and so you'll always get that check to remember grandpa or grandma, and that's not a bad way to go.
Yeah, Chuck, you're right. And you know, those grandchildren, they will wait for the postman to come by for that check.
Oh, absolutely.
Very quick.
Well, hopefully what our listeners are gathering here is what we're doing is, you know, the benefits of deferring income and the IRA is, number one, hopefully whoever's receiving the income or the distribution is recognizing those distributions in a low tax bracket year or at least not taking such a big distribution that it bumps you up into a really high bracket. And then, of course, the benefit of compounding, you get the compounding of the earnings on your taxes for all of these years, or I should say the beneficiary does, and that's that really adds up over the course of 20, 30, 40 years.
Yeah, you know, David, we are a live show, so we do want to let our listeners know and we have a podcast going on. If you do have a question and you want to ask David a question, we've got him here on the air. You can call us at 503-417-9595 or toll free 877-733-1011. Now, David, a question we get a lot on this show, and I got to ask you about it. If someone owns a 401k right now, or a 403b, or a TSP, or any other retirement account, what would you recommend they do right now?
That's a great question. It's a really important one, Chuck. You know, there was a day when we had company pension plans. They were called defined benefit pension plans. And, you know, you work 20 years, you have your retirement party, you get your gold watch, and then you had an income every year for the rest of your life. Well, Chuck, those have all dried up. And they've been replaced by the 401Ks, 403Bs, TSPs, and other type of company-sponsored plans. So to answer that question, I think the important thing to look at is why do people contribute in these plans? We know the fees and loads in the 401Ks and 403Bs are probably the highest you pay, but why would you still contribute? There's really only one reason to contribute, let's say, to a 401K. It's employer matching funds, free money. It's the best game in town. I put in $100, my employer puts in $50 or $60 or $70, and I got that free money. But here's what people don't pay attention to. When the contributions stop, the free money ends. And that's when it's time to get out of the plan. So it's what really happens, you know, when you're leaving a company, last stop is usually the HR department, and the first question on everybody's mind is, what should I do with my 401k? And you know something, Chuck, they always get the same answer. And the answer is this. You don't have to do anything. You can leave it right where it is and start taking distributions after you turn age 70 and a half. And the employer goes, great, I don't have to do anything. That's exactly what I wanted to do. And they leave that money in the plan, and they continue to pay those fees and loads. My recommendation is when the one reason to be in those plans, the free money, employer matching funds, when that stops, get out of the plan. So there's a real opportunity here that starts at age 59 and a half. You know, most people today, Chuck, the markets are riding very, very high. And the fluctuations are getting wider daily. There's a lot of people that have hundreds of thousands of dollars in their 401k plan, and they offer primarily mutual funds. And they're worried about, are we going to have another early 2000 tech bubble crash or another crash like we had in 2008? Is my 401k going to get cut in half? Well, here's a secret that your HR department won't tell you. When you turn age 59 and a half, you can take the money out of that 401k, you can roll it to a more flexible IRA, put it in a safe place. When the market crashes, you don't lose money. And here's the fun part. You can still contribute, as long as you're working, you can still contribute to that 401k, and you can still get the company matching funds. So essentially, by doing that, by getting out of that 401k at age 59 and a half, you de-risk that money. You get the best of both worlds. You have protection of principal, and you can still enjoy those company matching funds.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are some 401ks that allow for in-service transfers at 55 and above. You can transfer part of your 401k out of those and maintain the 401k and move it into something that is maybe a little safer than the portfolio that you're in.
Completely agree.
Well, speaking about that, let's just kind of follow that up. If you could give my listeners a piece of advice, what would it be?
Yeah, that's a tough one. Well, let me start by saying this, and going back to what I had said earlier, what I've noticed in my many years in the financial services industry is most advisors are accumulation advisors. They'll tell you where to put your money to save it. It's not very challenging. Very few advisors are skilled in the distribution rules, and that's really where it gets complicated and people make mistakes. So my number one piece of advice would be this. Get a second opinion from an advisor who specializes in IRA distribution planning so that you can get the most out of your retirement plans and avoid all these costly mistakes. And Chuck, a last piece of advice, if you don't do anything else, get an expert to check your beneficiary forms because that's where most of the mistakes are made. Many IRA owners unknowingly are disinheriting their children or disinheriting their grandchildren by not including them as beneficiaries. And a final piece of advice, please read my book. It's written in plain, simple English. I wasn't trying to impress anybody with my vocabulary. It's about a three-hour read, and it will likely change the way you approach retirement planning.
Absolutely. You know, I got to tell you, here a couple of years ago, Carl Jepson, the attorney, state planning attorney we have on the air with us, and Carl will be calling in here at the half hour point. But the thing I was going to tell you is that him and I had a client that came in, and it was a second marriage for both these people. They were both very successful people, and she had left an old 401k at a previous employer about four employers ago. So it was many, many years ago. And so I asked them, I was going through the beneficiaries, making sure they had it because they were both 70 and a half. And she brought out this old 401k statement, and I looked at it, and I said, you know, are you sure you've taken care of everything on this? She said, oh, yeah. And I said, well, let's call them and verify who the beneficiary is. It was her first husband.
The guy
she was married to now was not on there. And so right over the phone, we had them fax us the form so we could fax it back and change the beneficiary right then. But if she had passed away, her ex-husband would have got $50,000.
You know, Chuck, let me make a comment about that. There was a Supreme Court ruling where the United States Supreme Court unanimously ruled, and this was Kennedy versus DuPont Savings and Investment. And what happened, Mr. and Mrs. Kennedy got divorced, and she signed away all rights to that retirement plan. And they both decided they wanted that to go to their only daughter. Well, they failed to change the beneficiary form. I mean, you wonder, well, how could that happen? Well, here's what happened. Both Mr. Kennedy and his attorney believed that the decree of divorce is a legal document and had a more current date than a beneficiary form, so they didn't have to do anything else. So when Mr. Kennedy died and Mrs. Kennedy was contacted by the custodian of that money and said, how would you like this money paid? She said, well, you have to give that to my daughter. And they said, well, we can't. You're protected under a law called ERISA, and you are the designated beneficiary. We can only pay it to you. Well, she wound up taking the money. Her daughter sued her immediately because she was expecting that money. It went all the way to the United States Supreme Court. Bottom line is Mr. Kennedy's ex-spouse got his $402,000 retirement plan because they failed to get those beneficiary forms checked.
You know, David, this happens so often. We have people come in the office, and that's why I'm happy that Carl's right next door to me now, because we have people come in that have a will. And they assume that all their IRAs, all their 401ks, and everything they own is going to go via the will. And we explain to them, no, your will has no rule over your beneficiary assignment. And your beneficiary assignment has to be correct, or it's going to go where you have it sent to.
You're correct. You know, the IRA beneficiary form trumps everything. It doesn't matter what a will, a trust, or any other legal document says. the name of the beneficiary on that form is going to be protected under ERISA. So it's really important to get those beneficiary forms checked. Not just to make sure it's not going to an ex-spouse, but what about if it's going to go to a child who's likely to get divorced? Well, the moment that child receives that money and it goes into a community checking account, if they're in a community property state, for example, the soon-to-be ex-spouse already owns half that money. So you wind up leaving a portion of your IRA to your soon-to-be ex-son or daughter-in-law.
Yeah, absolutely. It happens more than people want to discuss, but it happens a lot.
Well, I think that goes to show estate planning is a dynamic environment when things change, not just with you and your situation, but with your beneficiary situations, all things to consider.
Well, David, I got a caller on the line, and his name is David, and he's got a question for David. David in Beaverton, are you there?
Yes, thank you.
And what's your question?
Question is, what do you recommend to someone about 80 years old with a sizable IRA over 300,000, let's say, and it's composed of stocks and mutual funds? I don't think we have the grandchildren on the beneficiary forms, but that's something I'll check after the program.
Well, great question, you know, and we see this a lot. Wall Street wants you to stay on Wall Street forever. Somebody who's 80 or older and has a sizable IRA, first thing I would recommend, protect the money. Put it someplace when the market corrects, you don't lose your money, number one. And there's a lot of safe places out there where you can get a good rate of return, and you won't have any market risk. And another issue with having all of your IRA in the market, you know, when you have to take out your required distributions each year, that's going to be based on the account value as of December 31st of the prior year. So let's say December 31st of last year, you had $300,000 in that account. And you don't take your RMD until November of this year, but that $300,000 dropped down to $200,000. Well, guess what? Your required distribution is still based on that old account value.
$300,000.
Right, before the market corrected. So you wind up taking out a large percentage, and it pulls your IRA down faster. When you also mentioned something about the beneficiaries, I really recommend you have that looked at. Everybody's circumstances and everybody's desires and goals are going to be a little bit different, but we're all subject to the same tax rules. So I would have Chuck have a look at that beneficiary form.
Okay. What do you recommend, just off the top of your head, a safe place to put something like that?
Well, safe money alternatives, they really come in a couple of categories. I mean, there's CDs. Of course, the CDs right now are paying a very low rate of return, but they're safe. Money market accounts are paying even lower, but they're safe. Personally, I chose annuities because of a higher rate of return, and an annuity is 100% safe. So you've got some options there, and that's really something you need one-on-one advice about, what's going to be best for you.
Okay. Super.
Great. Thanks, David. Appreciate the call.
Great talking with you, David.
You bet. Thank you very much. Well, David, we're going to have to take a break, and we appreciate your time today, and I hope to have you on the show again. I do offer anybody who wants to come by my office, pick up a copy of the Top 10 IRA Mistakes by David. I will give you a free copy, provided you read the book. Isn't that a fair deal, David?
I think it's a great deal. And Chuck, thank you for having me on today, and thank you for the wonderful work that you do in the Pacific Northwest.
Well, hey, thank you very much. We're going to take a quick break and come right back with Carl's comments. We'll be right back.
Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Price Financial Group Wealth Management.
Hello, my name is Carl Jepsen, estate planning attorney and co-host of the long-running radio talk show, Investing Simplified. My law practice emphasizes estate planning and probate. My mission statement is practical estate planning for peace of mind. This means that I listen carefully to my clients. I explain the various estate planning techniques and documents in the most understandable terms that I can. I try to make sure that my clients are comfortable with what we are doing together before proceeding, and I discuss my fees up front so the clients don't get any unwanted surprise. Estate planning and probate don't have to be that complicated. My experienced staff and I work closely with our clients to guide them through both of these matters in the simplest and most efficient manner possible. My office is located in the White Office Building at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 101, right across the street from Mall 205. My telephone number is 971-229-0585, and my website is carljepsonlaw.com.
Investments, tax questions, or legal concerns? Get them all answered now for free. Call Chuck, Kevin, or Carl for your answers. Call 503-417-9595 or toll free at 877-733-1011. Now, here's the Knowledge Trust.
Well, we're going to go. We've got Carl Jepsen on the line. Carl, are you there?
I am here.
Well, before I have you do Carl's comments, we got a caller that was hungover. I didn't see the call on there, but Jim had a question, so we wanted to answer his question first. So, Jim, are you there?
Yeah, hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, I'm going to be retiring in about 5 years, and I had a retirement account of... Well, I earned about $10,000 off the principal of $100,000, and I needed a new car. So what I did was I sold $10,000 of that, and I used that for the purchase of the car. I was wondering next year how much possible tax I may be paying on that, because I heard of the excise tax. I didn't catch the whole thing.
How old are you?
I'm 60.
Well, okay, 59. So when you did it, you were over 59 and a half.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, we get the CPA here to back me up, but my understanding is if you took a distribution out of your retirement plan, took that money out, and you took it to buy the car, you're going to pay income tax plus a 10% penalty because of being under 59 and a half.
Okay.
So whatever current tax bracket you're in, you're going to pay that tax bracket plus 10% penalty for taking an early distribution. Is that how you see it, Kevin?
Most likely. So there are some exceptions. Sometimes those don't apply, but it's worth looking into all the possible exceptions on the 10% penalty. And this was an IRA, you say?
I don't think it's an IRA. It's a retirement account with... I don't know if I can say their name on
Well, is it like a retirement account for a company, like a 401k or a?
No, it's not from a company. It's my own personal account.
Well, if it's just a brokerage account,
Well, then it's not a retirement account then.
It's with Edward Jones.
Okay, but is it an IRA or is it just a regular brokerage account?
I think it's just a regular broker.
Oh, well, then in that case, the only tax you would have is if there was any capital gains on the investment that you sold. So in that case, there's nothing wrong with that at all. You'd have no tax penalty at all. The tax penalty only applies to a qualified retirement account that you access prior to 59 and a half.
Well, it's an account, but it's for retirement.
Yeah, but it's just a regular brokerage account.
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, is the account say in your name or does it say an IRA for you?
No, it says it's in my name.
Okay, then that's just a regular brokerage account, investment account. In that case, the taxes would be whatever the taxes are for selling that investment. If there's capital gains, you may even have a taxable loss. I mean, you could end up taking the $10,000, and if that particular investment that you sold had a loss, you could actually write off up to $3,000 loss against your income tax for the year.
Okay, so it won't be too bad, even with even if they did have a 10%. Well, what did you call it?
Well, you won't have the 10% penalty.
Well, no, he was meaning 10% gain, capital gain.
Oh, capital gain. Yeah, capital gain. And you just call your advisor and they can tell you.
Yeah. Anyway, it won't be that bad. I mean, at the most, maybe $2,000 or $3,000 on that. I'm not worried. I just didn't want to have to pay $8,000.
Yeah. No. I don't think you have to worry about that
you know,
at all.
I'm sorry. I didn't come to your company earlier. I never heard you guys. I just started listening to you, and I may have just come out to invest with you guys, but I've got everything locked up now. So
okay, well, listen, we're there to help if you have any questions.
I listen to you every morning, and I always appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for listening.
All right.
Carl, how you doing?
Good. I'm doing well, thank you, I think, all things considered.
Well,
so,
listen, you may have missed it at the start of the show. We want to wish your wife a happy Mother's Day as well. And we wished all the mothers out there listening to us a happy Mother's Day tomorrow. And I think that the work that mothers do every day ought to be Mother's Day.
Absolutely. You know, there's that old song, you know, M is for... No.
Yeah.
I won't sing it, I promise. So anyway, yeah, I think that's always nice to, you know, that because that's probably the hardest job in the world, I think, maybe.
Oh, absolutely.
So, anyway, well, I listened with interest to David, of course, and I was thinking of all of those times when you mentioned, like, we've had people come in, and that's one of my kind of standard things to tell everybody is, you know, even if you've done it fairly recently, every, you know, year at least, find out what your company says your beneficiary designations are, you know, because somehow, some way, they sometimes get changed around or lost. And that would be, I know that, like, for example, when Chase took over Washington Mutual, I know that there were a bunch of those things that people called in and found out that their, you know, their beneficiary designations, they no longer had any record of them. And they didn't have a copy themselves. So I made it really awkward for them.
Well, and that's when you get involved and paperwork starts stacking up, isn't that right?
Yes, it does. Yes, unfortunately. Usually lawyers leave a trail of paper somewhere. it's like when you get lost in the woods, you leave breadcrumbs, we leave paper, you know? So anyway, but today, as far as Carl's comments, it's more of a, yeah, I guess it's a comment in a sense. It's a comment on the events that may require changes to your estate plan. And a lot of times people say, well, how often should I come back? And, you know, what should I do? Or when should I get a trust? Or when should I do this? And so those are always, or almost always, factual questions. But I've got like 10 of them. I always have 10 of them. I don't know why. Anyway, I've got 10 of them. But I wanted to, you know, if as I mentioned them, you know, feel free to join in or ask questions because, you know, there may be something I forgot here. But anyway, so we're talking about the 10 events that may require changes to your estate plan. And I'm kind of starting out with when you're young and working to the time that you're old. And so the first time I look at it is if you are a young single person and, you know, at most point, usually people have no estate plan, and it's probably fine for a young person. I know there are some people who would say, oh, you need a will. Well, you know, if you don't have anything and you're just not going anywhere, you know, a lot of kids, you know, they'll have, like, you know, nothing but sports equipment, but, you know, and it's all kind of, you know, sitting in the closet somewhere. So you don't really probably don't need a will at that point. But number two is marriage. At about that time, you got to start thinking about this stuff because, for one thing, you now probably want to make sure that your spouse is taken care of and at least you have some kind of a simple will, which can be very, very simple, extremely simple if people want to do that and very inexpensive to do. So that's number two. Number three would be the birth of a child. Now, all of a sudden, even if you don't have a bunch of assets, the number one thing that any couple or any parent has is, you know, you've got to take care of who's going to be the guardian of that child if you and your spouse both die in a common accident. I mean, that's and, you know, that's not very likely, but it can happen. And then, you know, you don't want Uncle Willie being the, you know, being the guardian, you know. It's just not something you want. So you put a nomination of guardian in a simple will. And again, you can do this with a simple will if there aren't too many assets, and it's really pretty easy to do. And then number four, you find out that one of the children has some kind of special needs. They're going to have some disabilities. Well, at this point, now you got to change the will at least so that if they end up with money from you, that it's in a kind of trust called a special needs trust, so that it doesn't disqualify them from, you know, getting the inheritance doesn't disqualify them from receiving benefits, governmental benefits that they may be entitled to. So that's a particularly important event. So we've skipped from birth of child to child with special needs. Now we've got divorce. And divorce changes a whole lot of stuff. First of all, the divorce itself will revoke the provisions of the will or trust or whatever that affect the distribution to the spouse. However, as you were mentioning on the program earlier, that doesn't cut off the beneficiary designations, and I think it's incumbent upon the family law lawyer who does this, but just think about this. You want to, at that point in time, after, if it says, you know, the retirement's going, you know, and a lot of times they divide the retirement and they have what's called a qualified domestic relations order, a quadro, I think they call it. And what that does is it divides up the retirement of somebody, and they usually do it in some kind of a proportionate way. But the main thing there is that covers, you know, the spouse, but I think you've got to still make sure that the beneficiary designations on the retirement plan need to be, you know, looked at and adjusted to what the real facts are, you know, after the divorce. So number six is remarriage. Surprise. And a remarriage, you know, now you may have extra kids, you know, in the sense that you get remarried, and if both of you have children, you know, you've got some complexity built into the whole thing there. And so, for example, you might want to consider some kind of a prenuptial agreement. Again, I would suggest you go back to your, I do them, I have, but that's not something I do as a regular practice. Ordinarily, I think it's better to have the divorce lawyer do that, but I can't if I have to. But that's not, even if without that, you will want to adjust your estate plan to reflect, you know, the fact that this is a remarriage and that there are children on both sides. And especially the issue of the children on the both sides. Let's say, for example, you have three children on one side and two children on the other. What happens? How are the assets divided if both parents die at the same time? Well, does it go equally to all five children, or does half of it go to your children and two, and you know, in other words, 50% to three children and 50% to two children, or do they all share it equally, one fifth? Believe it or not, that's one of those things that sometimes causes the interview to change temperature. So it's kind of interesting, but it's an important issue. So remarriage is another one, and it can be done. There's a lot of things that can be done. You can work out different scenarios to work with, but it's very important to think about that, because it could get really, really messy if things don't work. And don't be surprised if your lawyer says, hey, I can only represent one of you in this, depending on how things are. So if you don't, if you're not entirely sure how it works, then it may not be the, you know, it may be something that you want to attend to. So we've gotten through remarriage now, and you're approaching retirement, and maybe there's some health problems coming on, and now we've now walked over into the or you've acquired a whole lot of assets, but you're beyond the marriage remarriage stage, and you're moving along in life, and maybe some health problems can come up. One of the things you'll want to do there is start thinking about what happens if I become incapacitated, and you're going to need maybe a power of attorney, maybe you're going to have need a trust. You know, you're going to need to think about those things, and they have to be put into paper to make it work very well. And again, then you got to revisit this business about, you know, about where do the assets go if I've got children on one side or the other, and all that kind of stuff. So it becomes pretty important. And you'll also want an advance directive at that point, which is a healthcare power of attorney coupled with a directive to physicians as to when you want them to pull the plug on the machine. And those are important things. Also, you may want to have what I call a HIPAA waiver. What that is, HIPAA is the Insurance and Privacy Act, which essentially, you know, you go into the doctor's office and they give you a bunch of, you know, paperwork on it. But also, if you call the doctor and say, "How's my mom doing?" Well, if you don't have one of those, the doctor or the receptionist is going to say, gee, I'm sorry, I can't talk to you. I can't tell you because of the HIPAA law. And so that's, we do a lot of those so that the kids are able to call and find out how mom's doing in the hospital if they're in a town far away or whatever. So that's a kind of thing that's a useful tool. So then we talk about the death of a child. That's number 8. And I have a terrible thing, but you know, you want to figure out what happens if the child dies first. You know, you have to make sure that your estate plan has something to do with that. Number 9, you've got the death of a spouse, you know, and there are a lot of things that happen at that point, because depending on your asset picture and your estate plan, you may have to go out and divide the estate assets into 2 parts or more and set them into separate trusts and based on the documents that you have. This would be if you had an estate over $1 million, that's a likely possibility. But again, you got to go back to, you know, 6, 7, and 8 and decide at some point before you die and make the plans and put them into writing, because if you don't, then it's too late to do that. And that would, it would make it impossible to take full advantage of the tax laws to make it as cheap as possible for your heirs. So that's important. And number 10, you're going to be really surprised at this one. Both of you guys, you're going to really, really be surprised. The most important event of all is the acquisition of a 1967 Shelby Cobra, because you know that the rule is that the attorney always gets the Cobra, and you'll have to go to his office to do that.
Why is it I am surprised to hear that? Hey,
I don't know.
Carl, we got Lee, a longtime caller, has got a question here on the line, so I wanted to get in before the show, and we only got about 5 more minutes. So,
okay.
Lee, are you there? You got a question for Kevin?
I am, and I'll talk real fast here. First, on a grim note, I wanted to verify what you guys have been saying about beneficiary forms, because I had an ex-girlfriend whose mom died of cancer. She had been divorced from her husband for a long time. He had horribly abused the 3 daughters, but she never changed the beneficiary form, so that jerk got all of her California retirement money. So your readers for sure need to check those or your listeners need to check those beneficiary forms.
Absolutely.
On an upside note, you and Carl abandoned Kevin a couple weeks ago, and he had to do the show by himself, and he did such a good job that I think it should be renamed the Kevin Stege Show.
I'll pay you later. Thank you, Lee.
Yeah.
And my question is for you, Kevin, is I had a friend who has his own cleaning business. He was in an accident. His van worth about $4,000 was totaled. And he is telling me that all of his tax advisors have said, oh, you need to buy a brand new one so you can write off 100% of the value and you get to write off all the interest payments and all that. And I'm trying to tell him, because he doesn't make that much money, why not just get the value of the thing? You write that off. You don't pay all the interest over several years. And since you're not in the 100% tax bracket, you're saving yourself a whole lot of money over time. Is that good or bad advice?
It is a strong consideration. I always, you know, from the tax perspective, having a vehicle purchase like a van where you can write the whole thing off is like an ace up your sleeve when it comes to tax planning. You can take all of it, some of it. It's really nice to have, but the purchase of that sort of asset needs to make financial sense outside of the tax perspective also. And so that is a strong consideration. You know, if he's in a lower tax bracket, that type of a thing, it may not make sense. Although it doesn't take much self-employment income to all of a sudden be 15% federal, 15% self-employment, 9% Oregon, you're knocking at the door of 39%. When you're getting, you know, almost 40% back from a van purchase, that can really help. So definitely some things to consider, but I think your point needs to be looked at. It does need to be looked at, that it needs to make financial sense from the big picture. Is he going to be doing this business for a while? Does he need the van to do the business? You know, it needs to be a necessary purchase. So I think valuable input on your part to see all the different perspectives is important. Absolutely.
All right. Thanks a lot. And you guys need to make this a 2-hour show. Thanks very much.
Thank you. We appreciate the call, Lee. For Lee and all our listeners out there, the only ones that can determine what we do on the show is to contact your local station and tell them you want that. If they'll pay for it, then it's good. But that's the problem right there. Although everything goes by ratings and numbers, so if you're serious about it and you think some changes need to be made, let the stations know. You know, we appreciate your input. Guys, we got about 4 minutes, so...
Do we still have Carl on the line?
Yeah, Carl, you're still there.
I haven't died yet.
Ah. Yeah, he hasn't taken off in that Cobra yet.
No, I figure that's the bad thing is if I ever get that Cobra, I figure my life expectancy is going to be like 3 days.
good point. Yeah. Well, I just wanted to you touched on one of your top 10. One of the things that David, our IRA guy, that guest that we had on earlier. And you touched on it, I think, around number 6 or 7, and that was the death of a beneficiary. And I think there's also other circumstance changes in your beneficiary's life other than a death that could trigger a change in your estate plan. And, you know, he kind of touched on it. I mean, say one of your children's going through a nasty divorce. Yep. Or maybe they have an impending lawsuit or a bankruptcy or maybe a drug problem that has sprung up.
Absolutely.
Anyway, I just wanted to add that and see what your thoughts were on some of that changing, you know, your estate plan because of that.
Well, actually, we see an alarming number of clients who, you know, have one or more children who have found themselves in the trap of, you know, substance abuse, and it creates tremendous problems for parents and a lot of times we do things. We do some kinds of, you know, sort of protective trusts for the beneficiary. They don't want to cut them out, but they want to, you know, but they don't want them to have a bunch of money because they're going to, you know, they're going to do bad things with it. So we try to fix that so that they can't get more than what they need really for, you know, and sometimes you can condition that, you know, and make it sort of a tool to encourage them for, you know, treatment and things like that. But that, you know, that's an area that's really hard, but you can try. I like to see a tough trustee who has some compassion for the person and can make some good choices and you know, make some good limitations for getting money.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Very good. I don't think our listeners know how much value you just gave them in the last 10 to 15 minutes with your segment. There's more than one billable unit there that they got for free. So that was good stuff.
It frees a good price.
If I could send a bill to everyone who listens, man, that would be good, wouldn't it?
yeah. We got to figure out how to get into that.
That's right. Go buy your own Cobra.
Carl, how somebody get a hold of you if they want to talk to you?
My telephone number is 971-229-0585, and I'm at Carl Jepson. It's actually carljepsonlaw.com.
Okay, and Kevin?
We are at baker-colson.com. Our number is 503-666-5569.
And I'm at 503-253-3000 or 877-50-PRICE. And you can check us out on the web at pfgwm.com. I do want to state happy Mother's Day again to all the mothers out there. Hope you tune in the next couple of weeks to our shows. We have a lot of good information for you. We are the only live financial show in Portland, so give us a call and tell your friends about us. And I do want to say, if you're interested in David Royer's book, I'm giving it away. Just stop by my office. We'll give you a copy. The only thing we ask is that you do read it. It's the top 10 IRA mistakes, how to avoid IRA tax traps. And, you know, we've been saying on this show for a long time, knowledge is power. The more knowledge you have about your investments, The more knowledge you have about your taxes, your estate plan, the better off you are. God bless you all and have a great week. Happy Mother's Day again.
Price Financial Group, Wealth Management. We do investing simplified.
You can listen to past shows of Investing Simplified or sign up for our free newsletter at www.pfgwm.com. This show was brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103, Portland, Oregon, 97216, 503-253-3000 or 877-50-PRICE. Investing Simplified is a registered trademark owned by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Coulson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Coulson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercoulson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercoulson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Coulson, our service is the product our clients remember most.